From the Land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the sixth day of January 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net. TStorm.net's Mike Tenner will be here as we close out our time together to discuss the weather forecast. And along the way, I'll take you to earlier in the week in Las Vegas, where John Deere released its new autonomous 8R tractor. We'll hear from that press conference right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn today settled at 6.03¾, a penny and a half higher. December futures at 5.54¼, down 0.5 cent. March soybeans 7.5 lower, $13.87¼. November futures up 2.5 at 13.06¼. The bean meal down 2.40. The bean oil 54 cents lower. Hard red winter wheat for the day in the March contract at 7.68½, down 18.5, and the soft red at 7.46, 14¾ cents lower. Live cattle futures settled at 137.35, 10 cents higher, and lean hogs were 67.5 cents higher at 82.95. Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net now joins us to take a look at what's been happening in Chicago. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us. I'd like you to take us through the weather forecast, relatively speaking, as it relates to soybeans in South America and what that's done to the market this week.
Yeah, I mean, whenever you look at some of the private forecasts, I mean, we've had one here in the U.S., a major firm. We've had one, you know, actually down in South America as well, drop the crop double digits as far as million metric tons, which is just a huge drop. You know, and then you see other people, it's only dropped it 2 to 3 million metric ton or 4 or 5, you name it. But Southern Brazil's definitely been hurt. There's no question about it. How much of that's already in the market? I'd say a fair amount. I think this week, you know, some of the strength at times, you've seen probably a fair amount of new money kind of rolling into this market, looking at, you know, some of your inflation situations and just kind of trying to outguess what's going to happen over the course of this next year. But by all means, I think South American weather is the reason ultimately why we've rallied $1.50 here, you know, since essentially December 1st. It's been one heck of a run in the marketplace.
Now that's for soybeans. Are you recommending that producers take advantage of that for any old crop they may have left yet to sell and or new crop that they're looking forward to?
You know, I'm assuming if they've got old crop that it's not a substantial amount of bushels. I mean, if it is, I'd certainly layer some of those off. But if it's gambling bushels, like most of the producers I've talked to that are holding on to old beans, I might go ahead and see how this thing plays out, because there's no question that in Argentina and Southern Brazil, there's areas that are in a dire situation where production is going to be substantially cut. And so that should definitely spill over into the soybean meal market, which would definitely be supportive towards soybeans as well. And so as far as new crop goes, you know, you're sitting here trading over $13, and you know, you talk to a handful of producers, and you're not going to talk to very many of them that have sold any measurable amount of soybeans over $13 in their career. So I don't know how that's a bad sale. Now, I don't know that I want to get terribly aggressive, but as Ag Market, we're 50% sold or protected on November 22 beans. And some of that's with the chance to participate up to 14 or above. But regardless, we feel like having a solid floor in place whenever you're looking at prices, $12.50, $13, is something you really need to be doing.
Has the rally in the soybeans spilled over much into the corn?
Well, you know, there on Tuesday, the corn market just skyrocketed. I mean, you go up 20 cents on the front month. Definitely a very interesting move. Yesterday, of course, we gave some of that back. Then it looked like we're going to give more back today, and then all of a sudden the buyers show up. So, you know, a couple of different things that I've noticed about this corn market is that there are parts of the country where we're still seeing a huge push for corn, you know, and that, I mean, we're talking January the 6th. I mean, you got to be kidding me. The demand for this corn is very strong at this stage of the game, you know, and I've got to think that especially, again, in some of those areas where maybe the thought that ownership isn't as much as what they were hoping for, you're going to see some interesting things develop. Just talked to a producer in Kansas yesterday, southwestern portion of the state. Yeah, there's a lot of cattle in there. But he had a feedlot offer him $1 over the board. And so you know, there's places where the basis is just screaming in the first week of January. That's completely abnormal.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you, by the way, during Commodity Week today.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to it.
That is Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. Well, let's talk about autonomous tractors. Here on this campus, I can recall in the mid-90s, 95 and 96, being in the field, maybe in a parking lot, and watching a tractor drive itself. One of them was a Case, one of them was a Deere, that second one was in a field, and when a cell phone went off, at least we think that's what happened, it unhooked from the GPS at the time, and, well, the driver who was outside of the cab had to step in and take over. Well, John Deere, this week at CES, that's the Consumer Electronics Show that takes place annually in Las Vegas, has announced that this year, 2022, it will put into production a fully autonomous 8R tractor. Now, at CES, as is usually the case, there was a great big show press conference, and I watched that on YouTube earlier this morning and recorded some of the audio from it so that you can get an idea of what John Deere has in mind as it's related to an autonomous 8R tractor. This is one of their largest tractors that's in the field and designed to do tillage operations. Jamie Hindman, who is the chief technology officer for John Deere, took the stage first and reminded the folks at CES that John Deere has been involved in what he called advanced robotic machines for a very long time, almost three decades, in fact, going back to 1993 when it created the Precision Farming Group at Deere, followed up in 1997 by its first testing of a self-steering machine, and then its purchase in 1999 of Navcom to provide in-house GPS correction signals that gave their machines technology providing about 1-inch guidance accuracy in the field. And of course, this all happens now regularly without the farmer having to touch the steering wheel. And it lets them concentrate on all the data that's coming into the cab, says Hindman, to make production adjustments on the fly.
That precise location sensing technology enables farmers to place seeds, to spread nutrients, and to harvest their crops, all without ever having to touch the steering wheel.
And Hyman says AI, artificial intelligence, is the next iteration of making farmers even more efficient. The CTO says this kind of innovation has always been core to John Deere's DNA.
This is one of the many reasons why I love coming to CES when we get that inevitable question, and we always do, of why is Deere here? I love being able to talk about the innovation that farmers are embracing all around the world. If you visit a farm, you'll see as much technology in the field as you do in Silicon Valley. From robotics and sensors to AI and big data, the farm is a high-tech operation. And all of our technology serves a specific purpose that impacts every single one of us. The world's population is expected to grow from about 8 billion people to 10 billion people by 2050. That increases global food demand by 50%. Farmers must feed this growing world population with less available land and less available labor. They have to work through the variables that are inherent in farming, like changing weather conditions and climate, variations in soil quality, and the presence of weeds and pests, all of which have consequential effects on a farmer's ability to produce food. In addition, farmers have been and are dealing with issues of finding the people to do the work, similar to many other industries today. Depending on the crop they're growing, it can take 7 to 15 passes or trips through a field in order to produce a healthy and abundant crop. To get that done efficiently and in a timely manner, many family farmers are relying on hired machine operators. And without fail, finding good, dependable, skilled labor is always at the top of the list of pain points for the farms that I visit throughout the world. With people moving from rural to urban areas, there is an ever-increasing gap between the labor that's needed and the labor that's available. In short, farmers need technology to help them do more with less, minimizing their inputs, maximizing their outputs, so that we can all put food on the table. And that leads us to today. Are you ready? I know I am. I have been waiting for this moment my entire life. The future of agriculture starts now. But don't just take my word for it.
When you start out in the spring, you work the soil, and it just smells so fresh. When you till it up, and it's just the greatest smell. When I started farming, there basically was no technology. Every tractor was driven manually.
At this point in the press conference, John Deere rolls a video to introduce the 8R and the AI technology that is driving it autonomously, no one in the cab, in the field, and a Minnesota farmer is talking about how it worked this past season.
My name is Doug Nams. I'm a farmer from Blue Earth, Minnesota. I'm a fourth generation farmer, and I raise approximately 2,000 acres of corn and soybeans. I really never thought I would see an autonomous tractor in my farming career. For me, it was really exciting the first time I got to take the autonomous tractor to the field, swipe my phone, watch the tractor start with no one in the cab, start doing tillage, come to the end of the field, turn on the and, do the tillage just as well as I can do myself with no one in the cab.
The video went on to show this John Deere 8R without anybody in the cab making operational passes for tillage across the field. Once it was done, Deanna Kovar, who's responsible for the product strategy at John Deere's Precision Ag business, took the stage and said there are three things in her mind that farmers and farm families face right now that are critical challenges.
The ability to find skilled labor on the farm, getting the work done when it needs to be done, and doing it consistently to maximize crop yield. First, let's talk about finding skilled labor. Today, fewer people are starting careers in agriculture, and the current workforce is aging. More and more, people are moving from rural areas to urban areas. This results in fewer people being available where we need them to grow the food we all eat. Plus, the average farmer is over 55 years old, and they're putting in well over 12 hours a day to plant, nurture, and harvest their crops. This is not sustainable. Second, to grow a healthy, abundant crop, many of the jobs on the farm need to be done in a very specific time window during a season. And given the lack of labor, many years there's simply not enough hours in a day for everything to get done when it needs to get done to get the most out of the land. Finally, to get the most out of their land and their inputs, farmers need to drive consistency. But you see, from field to field, or even acre to acre within a field, the soil types, the moisture, the elevation changes. Yet the farmer needs to create a smooth, level seed bed in the spring to space millions of tiny seeds equally from one another at a consistent depth across 60 feet while driving 10 miles per hour. And that's just one example, and there are hundreds more, where the name of the game is consistency in an inconsistent environment to maximize output. Technology. Technology has been and will continue to be the answer to help farmers navigate through challenges like these.
And John Deere says the 8R, fully autonomous, and a kit eventually that will be adapted to other tractors already in the field, can help with that technology as it's related to AI. Willie Pell, who's the vice president of autonomy and new ventures at John Deere, told the crowd gathered in Las Vegas exactly how.
So fundamentally, robots need to be able to be two things. They need to be able to perceive their environment and make good decisions about what they perceive. This tractor has six pairs of stereo cameras, which enable 360-degree obstacle detection. And stereo cameras work just like the human eye. You have two eyes, but only one image. And the brain finds common objects between those two images and calculates the distance of the objects. We do the exact same thing with stereo cameras and machine learning. Then machine learning algorithms running on GPUs interpret the output. So the tractor also always knows where it is and where it has authorization to be. It does this by continuously tracking its global position relative to a geofence. And lastly, the tractor has redundant safety systems to make sure core components are working properly. That image the camera's captured gets passed into the deep neural networks that is trained on hundreds of thousands of images. The neural network classifies each pixel in about 100 milliseconds on NVIDIA GPU processors. Now, depending on whether the obstacle, like a tree branch or an animal, is detected, the machine either continues or it stops. Achieving high degrees of safety and productivity has been the core challenge of this project. And while a farm has fewer variables than an open road, building a production-worthy vision system requires world-class machine learning research team and many hard-fought innovations. This autonomous tractor is always improving through finding relevant data and training new models with it. And the training process rewards it for making correct decisions and penalizes it for making incorrect decisions. But one of the things that makes autonomy in agriculture really challenging is rare, difficult to foresee events for which we have no training data. For example, a billboard falls in a field. The tractor needs to be able to stop. However, for an event that obscure, we're not going to have adequate training data. So to handle these types of situations, we built an anomaly detection system which recognizes nominal scenes of sky, ground, and trees. And when it encounters new objects that don't fit within the standard class of object, the machine just stops. Using this technology, we're able to achieve a very high degree of safety and performance despite situations where the autonomous tractor sees a completely new or random object.
It's not just the data about where the machine is and what it's doing that really makes things go for John Deere and the farmer, says Jorge Herald, who's the vice president of automation and autonomy for John Deere's Intelligence Solutions Group.
The data is not just valuable for real-time monitoring. Data also gets stored in the John Deere Operations Center, and it gives farmers the ability to make strategic planning decisions that can impact how they conduct their operations in the future. I mean, it helps them proactively manage their day in terms of logistics and productivity.
And there, in the data, is the real objective for both the farmer and John Deere, the company. The data is the powerful tool. The management of that data, even as it's related to the automated tractor, is important, but it's the data that will drive the future of agriculture. And John Deere is putting the AR out this year in order to put its mark down on the direction of how some of that data is used. Let's check the weather now with tstorm.net's Mike Tenora. Thank you for being with us today. Mike, good to have you back.
Yeah, great being here, Todd. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you as well. In Argentina, they're celebrating the New Year with some really, really warm temperatures. I was looking out and above 100 by the time we get to the weekend. Can you tell me what this is about and what conditions the crops are growing under there?
Well, this is all an extension of what's been happening over the last several weeks. And even though we are in the middle of a small break from heat, heat is going to renew this weekend and then really get going next week. Todd, you're talking about 100s this weekend, but we can make a pretty solid argument for temperatures topping out around 110 degrees in some of these key corn and soybean growing regions come Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday next week. This is primarily happening because an upper-level system is approaching, and that's going to develop hot northerly winds as we get into early next week. And so that's going to send these temperatures soaring for several days. But even after that intense to extreme heat goes away, it still stays pretty warm, and there's not going to be very much rain over the next 10 days. On top of the upper-level high that's forming in Argentina, we also have a surface-level high that's nearby, and that's keeping humidities fairly low for this time of the year. So typically you would have high humidities and then you add in some heat and you pop thunderstorms. That's what typically happens in most growing seasons. But in this one, the humidity levels are too low. And because of that, temperatures are soaring, but the thunderstorms aren't coming along with it. And that's kind of the problem that we're going to have for the next 10 days.
Do things change very much as you go northward in that continent?
Well, once you get into southern Brazil and Paraguay, they went through some very dry weather over the last couple of months. In fact, November and December across Paraná was the driest two-month period for those 2 months in more than 42 years. And on top of that, Paraná, which keep in mind is the number two soybean-producing state in Brazil, it was the number one driest December in more than 42 years. And Rio Grande do Sul also had its driest December, and they're the number three soybean producer. So you're talking about around a third of the soybean crop just went through its driest December in more than 42 years. And there's a pretty strong correlation between yield potential and rainfall in that month.
And even further to the north, where the bulk, and I know you said a third in those areas, but at least a third is grown in just one state, Mato Grosso. I'm wondering what that looks like, and then into Tocantins and some of the other places to the north and east in Brazil.
Well, Mato Grosso is almost as equally as interesting it was as Paraná and Rio Grande do Sul, because November and December, that period was the wettest in more than 42 years. So the northern soybean areas were extremely wet, with Mato Grosso having received more than 24 inches of rain over that period of time. And keep in mind, 24 inches of rain is a lot for even them, because Mato Grosso is about the size of Oklahoma and Texas combined. You had an average number of just over 24 inches, and there were only a few years that were even close to that, and most of those were 20 to 30, even 40 years ago. It's like some years like 2001 and 1980. Those are the next two closest. So they arguably have the opposite story, where they had so much rain that either things are looking really good or maybe a little bit too much of a good thing. We'll kind of have to wait and see on that one. Now, as they move forward, it's not going to be as wet. We are going to see rain, and we'll have near normal rainfall of around 4 to 8 inches over the next couple of weeks. But it won't be quite as wet as it was in the past. So, Todd, this is an unusual scenario. I mean, I've been doing this for 16 years now. And, you know, when I'm writing these forecasts and thinking about everything to tell all my subscribers about, it always pops in my head, you know, how unusual is the situation? And this clearly is one of those career type of things where, I mean, how many times do you think we're going to be in the future and talking about having the wettest period in more than 40 years in the northern half of the soybean belt, while the southern half is having the exact opposite setup? So that's unusual, and that dryness also extended into Paraguay. So you need to keep in mind that Paraguay is also experiencing one of these very dry periods on top of it.
Thank you, and we'll talk with you again next week.
Yep, sounds great.
That's Mike Tenura. He's with TStorm.net. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. It is public radio for the farming world.